that is Francesco Silla Rossi, my graduate student. The paper is submitted for publication, but not accepted yet. So we both like number theory, but we both are not expert in this field. Therefore, it might happen that what I shall explain, first of all, can be just very well known. On the other hand, also can be wrong. Therefore, I just thank all people in advance for their useful remarks and any comments. But I want to start with just two statements, which presumably were well known in the beginning of the 20th century, but not so well known now. At least many people in Princeton University did not know the answer to this question. Therefore, I want to start with this and can be useful later. So I want to consider the following series, 1 over n to 1 plus I, S2, I shall write S2 for reasons which will become later. S2 is different from 0, so this is zeta of 1 plus I S2, and the sum over n greater or equal than 1. So what people think about the convergence of this series? Is it converging or not? Even conditionally converging. You made a mistake. Are you done? So just surprisingly enough, this series does not converge. It does not converge because it does not satisfy Cauchy criterion. And for some epsilon, it is possible to find some infinitely many pairs, n prime and n double prime, so that the sum of elements between these two intervals is greater or equal than epsilon. So this, in spite of the fact of the presence of this oscillating factor. But nevertheless, there is the way of summation of this series, which in some respects is the most natural. And I want to explain what one has to do in order to say what does it mean, the value of this sum. And so what we shall do is just the following. We shall, I shall formulate some lemma. And the lemma says the following. For every S2, which is greater or equal than 0, there exists some number tau, depending on S2, so that if we consider the sum for n, move from n to tau times n integer part, 1 over n to 1 plus I S2, then the absolute value of this sum is less than constant over n, where C is an absolute constant, and this estimate holds for all values of n capital. If this is so, then this immediately gives a way of summation this series. And namely, we shall consider some points, n0, then n sub k is just integer part of tau n k minus 1, n k minus 1. And from this lemma, it follows that if we consider the sum, the part of the sum of this series over this interval of time, then it is less or equal than some constant over n to k minus 1. And since the sequence n sub k grows as geometric progression, then this series is converging. there is just another corollary of this construction, which says the following, that if we just if I denote by zeta of 1 plus I S2 the value of this series constructed in this way, then it is just the limit of zeta of T plus I S2, where T tends to 1. And if just we have T greater than 1, then this series is absolutely converging. So there is no way of just asking what is the value of zeta. But the limit of this value is exactly the sum which we constructed before. This is the first remark which I wanted to say. Then the second remark is the following. I want to explain to you this very useful formula for zeta function. That in the usual number theory, the expression for zeta function is derived with the help of so-called functional equation, formulas for gamma function, and all that. And I shall show to you that actually there is a very nice and simple formula for zeta function. So that if you use this formula, you can really just somehow touch zeta function by hand. Yes, my personal feeling about this is the following, that people are interested by zeros of zeta function which lie on the critical line real part of S equals to 1/2. And I would like to know why the first 10 zeros of zeta function lie on this line. So what are the special properties of the function which ensure this fact? So now just, as I said before, I shall derive some expression for zeta function, which is, in my opinion, is just very useful. And it is just the following. We consider the function zeta 1 of S, which is the sum 1 over n S, where n is greater or equal to 2. And this is just zeta of S minus 1. Zeta 1 of S will be slightly more convenient for just what I'm going to say. And then we shall write that 1 plus zeta 1 of S is just 1 plus the sum mn minus m n minus 1 over n to the S, where n is greater or equal than 2. And then we make the summation by parts, and then we can write it that it is just 1 minus m1 over 2 to the S plus the sum over n greater or equal than 2. I'm just actually very sorry for the number of calculations, but it will be so during the whole lectures. I just apologize for this. Then it is just 1 over just n of s, mn. It is just 1 over n to the s minus 1 over n plus 1 to the s. And m of n in this formula is just actually n. Then we can take out of the brackets 1 over n to the s. Then we shall have the expression 1 over 1 plus 1 over n to minus n s, and make the expansion. And so just let me write to you the formulas which we shall have after all these calculations. Zeta 1 of s equals to 1 over s minus 1, 1 over 2 to the s plus s plus 1 over 2 factorial zeta 1 of s plus 1 plus, I'm sorry, minus s plus 1 s plus 2 over 3 factorial, zeta 1 of s plus 2, plus and so on. And general just expression here is given by zeta 1 by s plus m. And if m is just positive integer number, then zeta 1 of s is given by very well converging series. Therefore, in this expression, we can write down the asymptotic expansion for zeta 1 of s, and we can somehow manipulate with this series. We shall see what just, there will be just some facts which we will obtain along this line, but this is slightly later. Now, in the title of this lecture, there is Möbius function, and I want to explain how Möbius function appears just in number theory. And then I shall formulate the definition of the Möbius function. As people know, when a real part of S is greater than 1, then zeta of S has a representation with the help of the Euler product. And Euler product is the following expression. It's just 1 over 1 minus 1 over P to the S, where P where the product goes over all prime numbers. But this expression certainly is not very convenient. It's complicated. Therefore, it is more convenient to consider 1 over zeta of s. 1 over zeta of s is just the product 1 minus p to the s. But this is a very nice expression because we can just open the brackets. And then the result of this product will be the sum. And here I shall write just the denominator in the following way, pi1, pi2, and so on, pim, the number of m different prime factors, where the degree of each prime factor is 1, and then minus 1 to the m. So, something is wrong? So now just, what is missing? S is missing, yes. Thank you. Then just the definition of the Möbius function is just the following. Mu of n equals to 1. If n is equal to 1, then it is 0 if n is not square free. Not square free numbers means that the numbers n has at least one prime factor whose just degree is greater than 1. And then it is just minus 1 to the m, where m is the number of different prime factors. Therefore, this formula really shows that Möbius function is connected with a statistic of square free prime numbers, square free numbers. And maybe it is surprising for someone, but it is what started long ago that there is a lot of square free numbers, and just if we consider, if we just consider the number n is the number of m is square free, and m is less or equal than n, then it is the number is constant times constant times n. So square free numbers has a positive density. The expression for this density is well known. I can write it if it is just needed. And so the main question is how the structure of the set of square free numbers is compatible with the factor minus 1 to the m, which is here. And the main hypothesis, hypothesis. The first statement is not a hypothesis. It was proven that if we consider the sum of mu of n, where n changes from 1 to n capital, then the fact that it is small compared to n just leads to the prime number theory. Prime number theory is a statement which says that the number of prime factors less or equal than x grows like x over logarithm of x. And this fact is proven. So it's not a hypothesis. The second statement, the second hypothesis says the following, that if mu of n for n less or equal than n capital, less or equal, then some constant depending on epsilon, n capital to 1/2 plus epsilon for every positive epsilon, then this statement leads to Riemann hypothesis. Riemann hypothesis, which says that all zeros of zeta, all non-trivial zeros of the zeta function lie on the critical line in real part of S equals to 1/2. Therefore, the main problem connected with this hypothesis is the following question. What is the reason for oscillations of mu of n so that there are cancellations which lead to a relatively slow growth of this sum? Yeah. And this is what we shall discuss. I shall show to you that some language and some ideas from statistical mechanics can be just useful. Yes, or maybe before doing this, I want to say that there is a general relation which follows from all these formulas, which says the following, that the sum 1 mu of n to the s, sum greater or equal than 1, is just equals to 1 over zeta of s. And this formula is just can be easily proven when real part of s is greater than 1. From what I shall explain to you, it will follow that it is also valid when real part of s equals to 1. If real part of s equals to 1, then 1 over zeta of s is just the expression which I just derived you just several minutes ago. And how to prove that this series is also converging, it will be just explained a little bit later. But just going in advance, I want to say that one can say that this expression is just valid when real part of S is greater or equal than 1. But in this expression, we must require that imaginary part of S is not 0. So why it is just important relation? Because, as you know, the function 1 over zeta of s has an analytic continuation to the critical strip. Real part of s is between 0 and 1. If we could prove that this sum also has analytic continuation to the same strip, then it will give the proof of the Riemann hypothesis. Because if this is analytic function, then zeta of s cannot have zeros. Yeah. And this is one of the main questions around which there is a lot of discussion. And we shall be closer to this question. So now, after this preliminary, yes, preliminary fact, I want to explain some connection of Möbius function with statistical mechanics. We shall introduce the following set of numbers, omega sub m. And omega sub m is just a set of numbers where written in the following way, p1 to nu 1, p2 to nu 2, and so on, pm to nu m, where just all nu j takes the values 0 or 1. Therefore, the set omega sub m has 2 to the m numbers, and each of these numbers is square free. But the structure of this set is just the following. If we consider our just line and take the interval from 0 to pm, then square free numbers on this interval belong to ensemble or to the set omega sub m. If we go further, if we consider the next interval, then there can be square free numbers which do not belong omega sub m, because just some of this factor can be just because just this can be that square free numbers here can have some factors which are greater than p sub m. Then if we just consider the next, then it will be also some number of three factors. But it is easy to check that the number of points n from this ensemble omega sub m that here becomes much less than the whole interval. Here it is even smaller. Then the next interval it is even smaller, and all that. Therefore, from the point of view of statistical mechanics, the ensemble omega sub m becomes more and more rarefied. And for the number theory, which I explained, it is just important to consider only square free numbers on the interval 0 to pm. Therefore, we have just two just ensembles of square free factors, and it is very important to compare these ensembles. In statistical mechanics, the corresponding problem is called the problem of equivalence of different ensembles, and it is one of the most difficult problems in this part. But now let me go a little bit further. And I want to consider this set, introduce some probability distribution, P sub m, on the set omega sub m. This probability distribution is defined in the following way. It is P sub m of n is just 1 over normalizing factor G sub m times 1 over n. Where z sub m is chosen so that this formula gives us probability distributions, in other words, the sum of these numbers equals to 1. It is easy to find the asymptotic of this number. I don't needed, but I just want only to say that by analogy with statistical mechanics, G sub m is called partition function. And this probability distribution sometimes is called microcanonical distribution in analogy with statistical mechanics. So what are the properties of this probability distribution? Then in these ensembles, nu1 of n, nu2 of n, and so on, nu m of n, are random variables from the point of view of classical probability theory. And from these formulas, it is easy to check that these random variables take the values 1 and 0, and they are mutually independent. In other words, the probability that nu m n equals to 0, it is just 1 over 1 plus p sub m, and probability that nu m of n equals to 1 is just p m, I'm sorry, there is a mistake, p m, and here is just 1 over 1 plus p sub m. It is also easy to check that for different values of m, this probability distribution are compatible. In other words, if we take pi sub m plus 1 and consider its restriction to omega sub m, then its restriction will be probability distribution pi sub m. Hmm? No, this is the one which is here. No, I don't see my... So where is my mistake? Pm, it is the probability of 0 for this random variable nu sub m, it is Pm over 1 plus Pm. Pm, it is just, P, no, it's just this, ah, okay, thank you, yeah. Pj, J, yeah. Now it's better, right? What is what? N is just, N is point of our set omega sub m. And so just nu g of n is a function of n. And this, from the point of view of classical probability theory, it is a random variable. And in this ensemble, these random variables are mutually independent, and this has a probability of their values. The, yeah? Then, just let me formulate the first theorem. Introduce the following sum, zeta sub m of n, is just the sum, nu j of n logarithm pj over logarithm pm, the sum of a j from 1 to m. This is the sum of independent random variables, but the distribution of each of these random variables depends very much on j, and therefore nothing like Gaussian limit theorem is valid in this case, and Actually, there is just another limit theorem. It says just the following, that probability distribution, that the distributions of zeta m converge weakly, weak convergence is just main convergence in probability theory, and they converge weakly to the distribution whose Fourier transform or characteristic function has the following form, phi of lambda equals to e to the integral from 0 to 1 EI lambda V minus 1 over 1 D of V. Did someone see this distribution before? It actually appeared in probability theory earlier. It is called Dieckmann de Bruijn distribution. It appears in just probability theory in the following way, that it's not related to our problem. Suppose that we have just the sequence of eta j is a sequence of independent random variables which have the following distribution, the probability that eta of j equals to j is 1 over j, and the probability that eta of j equals to 0 is 1 minus 1 over j. And if we consider the sum 1 over m, the sum eta sub j from 1 to m, then the distribution of this normalized sum converges weakly to this Dieckmann de Bruijn distribution. And there are some other problems where this distribution also appears. And it's strange enough, it appears just in this case also. The proof just is based on the calculations of characteristic functions, because just our random variables are independent random variables and limit transitions. So I shall not reproduce it here, but I just want to make the following remark. If you consider the density of this distribution, then it has the following form. It is just constant on some interval from 0 to x0, and then it decays faster than exponential, almost like 1 over x factorial or 1 over gamma function. And just it's really very strange that the density of the limiting distribution is constant on the interval 0, 1. So, and just tomorrow I shall speak about another problem connected with just ergodic theory, where there appear also some limiting distribution for which the density is constant on some interval near 0. Therefore, probably this property is just connected with number theory. There are some reasons in number theory by which probability density have this form. Yeah. My co-author, Francesco Silarossi, proved that the probability distribution given by this formula is an infinitely divisible distribution. This is a class of distributions which were very popular in probability theory in the 30s and in the 40s, in the work by just Levick or Magorov-Hinchin, the general form of infinitely divisible distribution was derived, and so this is one of these distributions. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They wouldn't
be primes. Yeah. No, these are primes.
No,
they're
if you consider the sum image, right? You can describe the same way the distribution of
sets. No, this I don't know. What I know is that similar distribution will appear if you allow nu to take more values, not only 1 and 0, but allow them to be the integer numbers from 0 to some number k.
My question
was prime. Is it essential for this theorem to be a prime? Yes, it's essential. Otherwise, the asymptotics will be different. So now I want to prove for you some number of fact which we consider just rather strange or at least unexpected. Maybe I shall even prove some of them. And the next, so it was theorem one. Well, so now just there will be theorem two. I already mentioned to you that it is very important to know the behavior of the sum involving Möbius function. And so theorem two gives some result of this type. Just assume that f of t is a polynomial with integer coefficients c sub r, t sub r, where r is between 0 and r0, and c sub r are integers. Actually, it is not very important. The same result is valid if c sub r are rational numbers. The proof just goes with some minor changes. And then we consider the following sum, the sum e to 2 pi I alpha f of n and then mu of n. And the sum goes over all numbers n belonging to our set omega sub n. And alpha is just rational number. Alpha is just K over L, where K and L are just prime numbers which are coprime. Then the theorem says that this sum is always equal to zero. And I shall explain to you how this statement can be proven. Just the main the identity which is used in the proof is just the following, that if we consider 1 minus 1 to some degree just r, then it is always 0. On the other hand, we can just rewrite it that it is just the sum over all subsets x belonging to the set of r elements r, and then just minus 1 to the x. And this is also 0. So you will see how the expression of this type appears in this formula. Yeah, just before doing this, I want to give you just two concrete examples for this. Just first example is f of n is just n. And then it just means that e to 2 pi I alpha n mu of n, where n belongs to omega sub m that equals identically to zero. Then another example is that when we consider the sum e to 2 pi I alpha n square, then then this is also zero. Now you can imagine many more expressions of this type. So so how the statement can be proven? Just a second, I think I did not lose this. Here it is. First of all, we introduce some number of notations. N script M is the set of all prime numbers, P1, P2, and so on, P sub M. Then N prime of M is the set of prime numbers, Pj, from 1j to m, such that Pj compared to 1 modulo L. L is just the denominator of the number alpha. And then it just follows from Dirichlet's theorem that as m grows, then the number of prime factors belonging to n prime of m also tends to infinity. Yeah, I forgot to mention that in this theorem, we must assume that m is greater than some number m0. It's exactly the boundary is connected with Dirichlet problem. We must consider so large m, then there exists at least one prime number belonging to this set. Yeah. And then another set is just n double prime of m, which is just n m minus n prime of m. So this is only the notation, and now just comes the first useful formula. So if we just denote by I sub m the expression, the sum, which we have here, then we can write it in the following way. The sum over all subset n prime of m, which is contained in n prime of m, and then the sum of n double prime of m, which is contained in m double prime. And then we have e to 2 pi I alpha, k over L, then the sum over C sub R, coefficients of our polynomial, and then we shall have the product of P, P prime to the R, where P prime belongs to our set N double prime of M, and then P prime also of R, where just P prime here belongs to the complement N double prime of M. This is just rewriting, nothing else. But crucial remark is just the following. Since prime numbers P prime, which are in this product, satisfy this property, they are compared to 1 modulo L, then when we have this number L, then Pj can be just, since this factor can be replaced by 1. Because it's just 1 plus some number which is divisible by L. Therefore, if it is just 1, it can be removed. And then we have the expression of this type. And then the sum goes, I forgot to write here, mu of n. It is just minus 1 to the power n prime of m and minus 1 to the power n double prime of m.
Sir, what's I m here, the sum and the conclusion of the theorem?
These are just the notation.
What's I sub m?
Just I sub m is just the sum which we have. Just the sum which we want to estimate. The sum about which I want to prove that it is zero. And the fact that it is zero is just the following, that one of the factor can be replaced by 1. And then when we make the summation, then here, because of this factor, there will be the sum over all subset of this set minus 1 to n prime of m. The remaining part is not essential. We can assume that it is fixed and we can make the summation over it later, but this sum is just 0. So we just take subset, all subsets from this set, and consider the sum minus 1 to degree, which is the number of elements n prime of m. And this is 0. So this is the proof. Presumably, it is connected with just recent paper by just Green and Tao about the estimation of similar sums with the squares, but the connection is not clear to us, probably to them also. Yeah.
You mentioned at the outset that it was a surprising result.
Yeah.
Although the proof is very simple in structure, what led you to formulate it? Did you say it's surprising?
No, just the reason was the following, that there were just, there was a paper by Green and Tao where they estimated the sum of this type, not over omega m, but just from 1 to m, and they had alpha n squares. And we wanted to know what does it mean in our case. And it turns out that in our case it just gives identically 0. Okay, I shall erase this. Then now just go. Just some question, huh? Yes. Yeah. Is what? No, it's exactly 0. It's not. F is just arbitrary expression of this type, of this form. If it is just, if all the coefficients C sub R is 0, no, I think we need at least one of these coefficients to be non-zero. Yeah, more questions? So now just we'll come to theorem 3. There will be theorem 3 and theorem 4, not more. Yes, here it is. So theorem 3. Let f be a periodic function of period 1 which has a following form, the sum F sub k e to 2 pi I k times t, so F, this F of t, it's the sum of this expression, and we assume that the sum of absolute values of F sub k is just finite. And then we consider the following sum, I m of f, it's just the sum of f logarithm of m over logarithm pm times mu of m. And the sum over m from our ensemble omega sub m. This is the expression. So we just take the interval of the length logarithm pm, we consider it periodically, and we just take arbitrary function on this interval and then repeat it periodically. This is a function f, and theorem 3 says that I m of f is also identically zero. No, I can just give you the proof. It is just also rather simple. It is just based upon some constellations in the formulas. Yeah. And so zeros does not follow from particular special property of mu of n. It just follows from the formula which we have here. And then I just maybe formulate you the last theorem. Now actually we have more, but I shall formulate it only one. Okay. The last theorem concerns the case when we take an interval of the length k times logarithm pm, and then we take here just periodic function and repeat it periodically with this period. So it is a periodic function, but its period is just bigger. Yeah. Then we just consider the sum of f m sub k, which are Fourier coefficients of this function, times e to 2 pi I k over m times t. Yes. Then this expression satisfies this estimate. It is less or equal than E than some constant M over logarithm of M. And this estimate shows that Möbius function is not truly random function. Why it is so? Because if it were truly random function and the number of elements in this set omega. So what, I did something wrong. Now here it is just k over all integer z, and this is just Then this is just the expression which depends on f sub m, which is just the series. This is f. It is f sub m. And then we have just the series involving this function. Then it is less or equal than constant m over logarithm of m. So the number of terms here just maybe... I'm sorry, I did
something just, or here just, I wrote something wrong. It is just the expression which I need is just the following. I am K, and I am K is just nothing else like the sum E to 2 pi I just K over R logarithm of N over logarithm of PM and then times mu of M. Because this is the sum of the same type, but the period is just bigger than logarithm of PM here. The period is R times logarithm PM. Huh? What, K? No, just I am depends K over O. Yeah, it just depends on M because just the whole ensemble depends on M. Yeah, just the sum over O M, the sum over O N belonging to our set omega sub M. Hmm? How it is related to F, here are just the coefficients. You're just... No, okay, that maybe the simplest thing will be just to write this expression not for F, but just for one term in the Fourier series. The sum. And then this Fourier series satisfies the estimate which I wrote before. So if it were pure random K, then we would have something like M over 2. The number of terms is 2 to the M, and therefore the sum of independent random variables of this number should grow like E to M just over 2, or M times some constant. But here, it's the sum is just less or equal than E to M over logarithm of M. Therefore, it is much smaller. In other words, zeta function is not exactly random. It just has many properties of randomness, but some just deterministic property in the Möbius function mu of M are also present. Okay, thank you very much. I think I'll stop here.